remember, the goal for this, the goal here is to get, the goal is an effective description in system Hilbert space. Without mentioning other classical or quantum resources that make a more general description necessary. Now let me just, I call it non-unitary dynamics because the dynamics won't be unitary. It'll be some completely positive map or maybe something even more general. I write non-unitary here because you have to be careful because I've seen papers by people in, you know, discussing theory of black holes and things like that where they think non-unitary is some kind of violation of quantum mechanics. And that's, of course, not true at all. It's completely consistent with quantum mechanics in multiple ways. I mean, one is the state update rule is not unitary, and that's clearly part of quantum mechanics. And also, we get these completely positive maps, which are not unitary, also clearly part of quantum mechanics. So we have this mixture scenario, and then what we can do is we can just define a set of operators. Notice that we can define an operator AI as the square root of PI UI. So the map lambda is then a sum over I AI rho AI dagger. And remember, in general here, we talk about lambda as a map that takes density operators to density operators. I don't know why I made the lambda so big there, but. Okay, and then case two was ignoring some Hilbert space. Okay, so here we have HA tensor HB and our system is in the Hilbert space HA, so we have some density operator rho A. And we want to describe the action on this state, so then we imagine that we have some state of rho A and rho B, and we have some general unitary acting on them. We can also imagine these are pure if we want. Doesn't really matter. And then what we do is this goes in the trash can, so we don't pay attention to it anymore, and then we want to describe rho A prime, and then we get rho A prime is equal to the trace over B of U acting on rho A tensor rho B U dagger. We can always, for simplicity, we take rho B to be equal to some zero state. And we can do this specifically because we haven't bounded the dimension of B. So I can always just take HB to be big enough so that rho B is a pure state via the dilation theorem we saw for mixed states. And then what you get, you just compute that, and what you get is that rho A prime is equal to lambda rho A, which is going to be equal to a sum, let's call it K, AK rho AK dagger, where AK is equal to um,
K. Yeah, K. K.
U. Zero. Okay, so what's going on here? So what's going on is that, let's see why we get this. So the trace over B of U row A tensor 0, 0, U dagger is equal to a sum over K, where K is an orthonormal basis for HB. Remember, the partial trace here means we're just summing over a basis for HB. So then we get K U row A tensor 0, 0, U dagger. Whoops. K. And now what we want to do is we want to, now we realize that, look, row A is on Hilbert space. So here row A is just an operator on Hilbert space HA. And U is, of course, U is an operator on HA cross HB because it's coupling the two systems. Okay, so it's the very fact that U is acting non-trivially as an interaction between systems A and B that makes us, that's going to make this map not a unitary map. So what that means is we can actually bring the zero state through here. And then we just do this identification where AK dagger is defined similarly as this piece. And what's going on here is the partial trace takes as input an operator on a big Hilbert space and returns an operator on a smaller Hilbert space. So that pretty much completes the proof that what's going to be left over, this should be row A here. So we see that this same structure, we have this same structure in both cases. So these things are called Krauss operators. So in both cases, we have that the sum over K, AK dagger, I think I got the order right here. No, I don't. Is equal to the identity operator. Okay, so you can see this how. Well, we can directly, we can take this definition and we can just sum over it and see. So in case one, we take the sum over K, PK, U dagger, UK. And this is, of course, equal to identity. So this is equal to a sum over K, PK, times the identity operator. And this is, of course, equal to 1 because it's a probability distribution. So we just get the identity operator. And then here, this identity operator is the identity operator on A. So the fact that it's in the A Hilbert space is implicit. And then let's check it in case two. In case two, we have that definition there. So let's see if we can do this really quickly. We would have a dagger, which is going to be the dagger of that. So that's going to be 0 U dagger K. And then AK is just going to be K U zero, I hope. Yes, perfect. And now here's the trick. This is something you guys should always know. You should always have this in your back pocket, okay? The sum over K over a basis is equal to the identity on whichever Hilbert space that basis spans, okay? So this sum over K spans the Hilbert space HB. So this is equal to identity on B. So that means that this is equal to, we just bring the sum up through here because this doesn't depend on K and that doesn't depend on K. So we just get 0 U dagger U times identity on, well, we can always drop the identity operators. And then u and u dagger is, of course, equal to identity on a, b. Actually, that is funny. I guess we get a little extra identity operator kicking around. Okay, this surprised me a bit. So now this is just going to be equal to 0 identity on a, b, 0, which is just equal to identity on a, b. So I'm a little bit surprised I got identity on A, B here instead of identity on A. Maybe that's a trivial difference.
But you take the product in the B space, so you should get the operator on A, right?
Yeah.
Where? Which step here?
0, 0 is on B.
0, 0 is on B only. Oh. So that removes B. Oh, yeah, perfect. Okay, great. Thank you. So, yeah, this is equal to essentially then identity on A times 0 identity on B, 0, because, of course, identity AB is equal to identity on A tensor identity on B. Great. That makes sense. Okay. So then this is just... Great. Okay, so we see we get this nice condition. So now, as before, we want to say, okay, so now we see these two paradigm cases give rise to these generalized maps. And then we want to ask the question, does any map of this form correspond to a physically realizable map? Okay, and then we have, then we have Krauss's theorem, any map of the form lambda rho equals 8 equals sum over k, ak rho, ak dagger, such that sum over k, ak dagger, ak is equal to identity This is called, I'm going to be a little bit lazy and I'm going to include the definition within the theorem. I know you guys won't like that. Yeah, I'll do it anyways. Called an operator sum decomposition. Makes it a map is of the form if and only if it is a completely positive map. It is a completely positive trace preserving map. Called CPTP map. And what does completely positive mean? I sketched the meaning to you at the end of last class. Trace preserving is obvious. Completely positive means, suppose I have HB, HA, and HC. So now I have some unitary on A and B. And then I'm going to disregard B. And then I have HC kicking around. So this is equal to HA lambda HC, where this is nothing's happening here. So someone asked me to do this mathematically, so I'll do this mathematically. This means that we have, let's suppose we have some general state chi, which is an element of HA, tensor HB, tensor HC. Let me put A in the middle, so I'll put B first. So BAC. I'm also going to assume, that chi equals, let's let the state on B be different, so we'll just call it the zero state, plot loss of generality, and then we'll put the state, we'll call it phi, well, I'm not using a sloppy notation here. Let's let chi be zero on B, tensor some state phi on AC. Okay, so then we get this expression here where lambda is as defined on the previous board. So we use the zero B and the same U. And then of course rho A is equal to the trace over C of phi phi on AC. And that's the rho A. Did I put a pure? Yeah, that's rho A here. So lambda is completely positive if for every phi in HA tensor HC, which can include entangled states between A and C, and then let's call this output, let's call this rho AC prime. Rho AC prime, which is equal to lambda tensor identity on C acting on our input state. Is positive. Okay, that's different than positivity. So we say lambda is CP if this is true. Lambda is positive if for every rho A in the density operators on HA, rho A prime equal to lambda rho A is positive. So basically what we're demanding, now why do we want the state to be positive? You all remember that, right? And we want it to be trace preserved as well. We want the output, trace preserving means that the output state rho prime, the trace of rho prime is equal to 1. If the trace of rho is equal to 1. So that's just normalization. Why do we want normalization and positivity of our density operators? Pardon me? Correct. And more precisely, why do we want density operators to have that feature? What is the empirical constraint we're trying to meet?
Probabilities need to be positive.
Exactly. You want, when you apply the Born rule against a self-adjoint operator or a projector, you want to achieve probabilities that are positive and add to one. They should be probabilities. The Born rule has to yield probabilities. And then imposes a constraint on the measurables and imposes a constraint on the mathematical structure of the states. So we want to guarantee that, so the point is this, if I don't demand complete positivity and I just demand positivity, what happens? Well, I can find some input states that when I act on part of that entangled state, the output state, if I do a measurement on it, I may not get well-formed probabilities through the Born rule. So I must demand complete positivity. What's interesting is that it's a non-trivial constraint. So of course, the maps we constructed, the examples we constructed, which were derived from physical applications of the ideal axioms, they led to maps in Krauss operator sum form. So we had the Krauss operator sum form as a result of starting from the ideal axioms. We get this. Krauss's theorem tells us it's going to be completely positive, and I've shown you that we definitely want it to be completely positive for very good physical reasons. So then the next question is every completely positive map, completely positive trace-preserving map, or equivalently, is every map which is in this Krauss operator sum decomposition form, is every such map realizable via the ideal axioms? And the answer is yes. And that's known as, what's the name of it again? Steinspring dilation theorem, maybe? Steinspring dilation theorem, good. But I mean, maybe before I do that, let's just calculate. Would you rather see an example of this? Like, we can calculate an example, and then I'll give you the high-level theorem. So let's look at an example. So the example is this. We're going to take U, which is a linear operator on HA. We'll look at two qubits, so we'll do C2 cross C2. Two qubits. And then in particular, we're going to take something which is sometimes called the C0, which is actually a matrix. And then here our basis states go like 0, 0, 0, 1, 1, 0, 1, 1. Where you can think of 0 as being spin half up along Z. And you can think of 1 as being spin half down along Z. And of course, this is system A and this is system B. So this is just a shorthand way of writing 0. Tensor zero. And so this is a non-trivial interaction of the two systems, the two spin half systems. And so we can imagine the initial state let's consider the initial state 0 tensor zero. Well, then we have U C naught acting on psi is going to be equal to, or represented as, 1, 1, 0, 0, this state means there's only a component in the first vector. The first vector component is non-zero. Okay, so then we do our matrix multiplication, and the output state is 1, and then all zeros. So this did nothing, does nothing to that input state. Now suppose the input state is instead equal to 0 plus 1 over square root of 2 times 0. Then UC naught acting on psi has a matrix representation, which is this same matrix. And now we represent this state. So this state is equal to 1 over square root of 2 times 0, 0, plus 1, 0. And this is not entangled. This is not entangled because I'm explicitly writing down a factorable state. But now we apply UC0 to it. So now the column vector for this has 1 over square root of 2 in the 0, 0 component, and it has 1 over square root of 2 in the 1, 0 component. So now we act on this. We'll get a 1 over square root of 2 out front, and this is a 1, so we get 1, 0, 0, and now we pick up this. So now we get 1, 0, 0, 1. Because when we did 0, 0, 1, 0 acting on this column vector, we get that third component. Okay, and this is in abstract form. This means we have 1 over square root of 2 times 0, 0 plus 1, 1. Now we can look, this is entangled. Okay, and we can see it's entangled because if psi is equal to alpha tensor beta, if there exists an alpha and a beta such that psi has that form, then we know that the trace over B of psi psi equals rho A equals alpha alpha, which is a pure state. So that's a pure state. And so then we know that that's how we test for it not being entangled. But here, if psi equals 1 over square root of 2, 0, 0, plus 1, 1, and then we calculate rho A equal to the trace over B of psi psi, then we get, we sum over k, put the outer product in there. So we're going to have 0, 0 plus 1, 1. And then we're going to have 0, 0 plus 1, 1. And this is going to be over 2. And then we have a k here. So now this is equal to this is equal to 0 goes from 0 to 1 on B. So for the 0 term, this will survive, this won't. This will survive, this won't. So for the 0 term, we're going to get 0, 0 over 2. And for the 1 term, when k equals 1, this will survive and this will survive and that's it. So we get 1, 1 over 2. 0, 0 over 2 plus 1, 1 over 2 is exactly identity over 2, which is a maximally mixed state. If psi was unentangled, the partial trace was guaranteed to yield a pure state by construction. By definition of it being unentangled, we have to get a pure state when we take the partial trace. If it's unentangled and pure on the large system, here we got a mixed state, therefore we know that this state is entangled. It must be entangled. So, what this matrix does, this unitary transformation on the 2-qubit space, is acting on some input states, it generates entangled states. So that means somehow it's acting non-trivially on the joint system. So now we'll compute the superoperator lambda associated with this? Any questions about this calculation? So now let's calculate the Krauss operator sum for UC naught. And then the first thing you notice is that the Krauss operator sum, by its definition, up here, where is it? There, by its definition right there, the Krauss operator sum depends on the input state to system B. So the action, the transformation that happens on system A depends not only on the unitary, which corresponds to the Hamiltonian dynamics of the system or the Lagrangian dynamics of the system, it depends also on what you put as the input state to system B, okay? So recall, the map lambda will also depend on the input state. Of system B. So where lambda is a map that takes density operators on HA to HA, but what map you get depends on the input state to system B. Okay, so in particular, we're going to get that AK is equal to KU0. And this assumed that 0 is the input state to system B. So we assume that 0, but of course 0 is not the input state to system B. The case that was interesting, it was 0. Okay, good. So the case that was 0, right, okay, perfect. So that's good then. So then what we can do is we can calculate so this should work. I'm doing this off the top of my head, so let's hope I'm not missing anything. Okay, so here's AK. So then we can just compute this. So now let K equal 0, then A0 is equal to 0 U0. So now we said that U C0 is equal to 1, 1, so now we want to evaluate this. So 0 and 0, this corresponds to the 0 state corresponds to the column vector 1, 0, 0, and the 0 vector corresponds to the column vector 1, 0, 0, 0. So then we have A0. There's something wrong here. Something wrong here. So this isn't quite right. Hold on a second. This 0 is a 0 just in Hilbert space B. So this is the state 1, 0, and this is the state 1, 0 on B. So what's the best way to do this? Okay, so let me just set this aside and do this straight from the definition. I think what I want to do is I want to write U. I think I want to write U as a set of projectors. So I want to write it as 0, 0. Plus 0, 1 plus this term is it's either going to be I always get this backwards, so it's, well, I guess both are there, so it's not going to matter. This is going to be I'm gonna be able to do this here. What this takes as input is, it takes the third element as input, which is 1, 0, and it returns the fourth element. And then we want the opposite. Okay? Pretty sure that's right. You can do this now, just construct the matrix elements by doing I, J, U, C naught, K, L. So if we have the 0, 0 matrix element, we get a 1. If we try 1, 1, U, C naught, 1, 0, which would be the fourth row, third column, then we pick out this element and we get a 1, and so on. Okay, so that's how we take the matrix and re-express it as an abstract operator with respect to some basis. And now, now we define A0 which is equal to 0B U C naught 0B means that we take this operator and we act on it with this dual vector and this vector. So that means only the terms that have a 0 in the second tensor factor will survive. So this term will survive, this term won't survive, this term won't survive, and this term won't survive. So this is equal to 0, 0. And then A1 is equal to K equals 1. And then we have UC0. And then we have a 0, because that's our starting state. And that means only terms which have a 1 for the second slot for the B factor space will survive. But then in the dual vector, there has to be a 0 in the second slot. So we need a 1 here and a 0 here, and the only term that survives that is this one. Because this is on B. So exactly when you have like half of part of the Hilbert space acting on an operator like this, that's when you have to keep track of the subscripts. So then we get, was it this term that survives? We get 1, 1, and it's not 1, 1. So now the A coefficient associated with this term is, the A coefficient is 1, 1. Okay, so we've just constructed the Krauss operators. So as matrix elements, this Krauss operator would look like, of course, it's a 2x2 matrix because it's on the first spin system alone, and it's 1, 0, 0, 0. And this one as a matrix representation would be 0, 0, 0, 1. And so now we know that lambda for the C naught, and assuming as input the zero state on B, acting on some arbitrary input state rho of system A, is equal to exactly this. So it's equal to, we could write it out two ways. We could write it as A0 rho A0 dagger plus A1 rho A1 dagger, or we can write it out in terms of its representation, which is going to be 1, 0, 0, 0, rho, and then 1, 0, 0, 0. It's self-adjoint, so the dagger doesn't do anything, plus 0, 0, 0, 1, rho, 0, 0, 0, 1. And now you can see from this, look at our example. When we took the input state to be the zero state in this first case up here, then that's just going to be, so for case one, rho is just equal to 1, 0, 0, 0. And that, of course, just returns rho again, and this term kills it. So in that case, for case one, lambda of rho just returns rho, which is the original pure state we put in. For case two, where rho was equal to 0 plus 1 over square root of 2, then we have 1 over square root of 2, 1 over square root of 2, 1 over square root of 2, 1 over square root of 2. Let me just make sure I got that right. I'm doing something wrong here, right? A half, yes. A half.
A half everywhere.
A half everywhere, thank you. So now you can see, when you look at a density matrix like this, you can tell right away that it has maximum coherence because of the fact that the off-diagonal saturates the values of the diagonals. So this is the telltale sign of coherence and of being a pure state. So for case two, then, we get lambda rho is going to, this first term will pick out 1/2. One, zero, zero, zero. And the second term will project out the ground state, the lower right-hand corner, which is 0, 0, 0, 1. Which is, of course, you add these up and you get a completely mixed state. You get the identity operator normalized for trace. Okay, so that's an example of how you compute these transformations. Any questions about that? Okay, so now let's look at Steinspring dilation theorem. Which basically just says that any CPTP map can be realized as a unitary transformation. I'm just doing it in words here. On a larger Hilbert space. Okay, so remember with Neimark's theorem, we had this structure called a POVM, and Neimark showed us that any mathematical object, which is a POVM, actually can be realized in the lab as some unitary transformation followed by a measurement on the Ancilla system. And now Steinspring dilation theorem is the analogous result for transformations, which is that any CPTB map transformation can be realized as a unitary on a bigger Hilbert space, given some, and this is for some input state, on the Ancilla Hilbert space. Let's call this H A tensor HB. Okay, so now we have this nice correspondence between this mathematical set of objects and realizing that it corresponds to what we know of from the ideal axioms. Okay, so this leads to this very nice tidy formalism where people think about CPTP maps and POVMs and density operators as the fundamental structures that define the postulates of quantum mechanics. So now you've seen, so then if we write down postulate 3, this is the generalized version, is that any transformation any quantum transformation can be described by a CPTP map. Okay, so these are the three generalized postulates, and as I just mentioned, this is what people take as sometimes a starting point for defining quantum mechanics.